It's Jim. It's the world of bonds. It's Friday, the 16th of July, 2021. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. It was another decent bond day yesterday, especially for US Treasuries, and the 30-year US Treasury is now back below 2% in yield. Open your paper, or go on Twitter, and everywhere you'll read inflation, 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 whether it's food, cars, computers, flights, whatever it is, rents. And yet bond markets have rallied in the US through three really high CPI prints. And so it's telling you a couple of things. One, that markets probably believe in the credibility of the Federal Reserve. We have seen shorter dated US Treasuries underperform the longer dated US Treasuries, a flattening bias to the curve, because people believe that, yeah, the Fed may hike, but they've got it. They've got this one. They're not going to let inflation get out of control in the long term, and therefore your bonds are safe with the Fed. So it's partly that, and secondly, it's probably they don't believe there really is a threat. You know, there are other factors, including Delta variant, the reserve army of the unemployed, etc., that are going to be more important and are going to keep inflation transitory. And, you know, I saw a good chart. There's always charts that prove your biases, but, you know, there's one showing the breakdown of the rise in US inflation and just how much of it, a huge chunk of it, is due to shortages in the chip industry and how that's fed through into the headlines. Then you add on base effects and stuff like that, and there's not much left. But of course, if you strip out the things you don't like, there rarely is anything left. Anyway, you know, I've put on Twitter before 30 or 40 years worth of front covers that I collect from various magazines that have pictures of them, whether it's Time magazine, The Economist, Money Week, whatever, showing cartoons of inflation as a dragon that must be fought, a mugger hiding around the corner, a monster under the bed, some sort of bogeyman. And, you know, as we know, the last 30 years or so have been one of falling inflation rather than those bogeymen ever coming out into the open. So the bond market has been in this, it's not their first day in the rodeo when it comes to the popular press talking about inflation, and it hasn't transpired. Again, as I've said, I think this time might be different, and we're going to talk about Reinhardt and Rogoff in a bit, for those of you who know that book, but it probably won't be. One bond market has had a poor couple of days relatively though, and that's the UK gilt market. We had Michael Saunders, one of the MPC members, give a speech talking about inflation, in which he was in the mugger, dragon, monster camp, really. And he thinks it is as much a threat now that would justify a reduction in quantitative easing and stimulus. And that leaves a couple of people in the MPC even, in the kind of reduction of stimulus camp, even though they have lost one of their most famous hawks with Andy Haldane leaving the Bank of England as chief economist recently. But, you know, gilt markets definitely underperforming on the back of that Michael Saunders speech, which raises the prospect of an end to QE at some point sooner, perhaps, rather than later. Still the minority, though. Today, I'm going to talk about Morgan Stanley's new paper that came out yesterday or the day before. It's called Debt Sustainability, R-G is Key. Those of you who follow bond markets will know that R is the real bond yield, effectively. G is the real growth rate, so stripping out inflation in both cases. This probably follows up from a Olivier Blanchard paper that was a couple of years ago now. He kind of stated that we don't need to worry too much about how big our debt burdens get as long as we're borrowing at crazy low interest rates, and that's really the key to this paper as well. But it is a bit of a riposte to, as I said, This Time is Different, the famous Reinhardt and Rogoff book that came out following the global financial crisis and ahead of the Eurozone financial crisis, in which they looked through a very long run of data and came to the conclusion that when a sovereign nation's debt to GDP ratio went above 90%, that country would likely get into debt problems and would need to restructure or default on its debt. Now, I always point out that you should read that book. It's a fantastic book. It's enlightening, interesting, well written, but it is wrong. You know, they did make a dramatic spreadsheet error that missed out one or more sovereign nations from the calculations due to an Excel error that changes the conclusions quite dramatically, and in favour of debt burdens not being as dramatically important as they asserted in the book. Now, this paper from Morgan Stanley does a deep data dive as well, and they look at 76 instances of public debt build-ups, in a 100-year history, similar kind of debt build-ups as we see today with UK, US, Europe, Japan, all heading towards 100% debt to GDP, in the case of Italy and Japan, much, much higher than that. And their conclusions, and the papers written by seven different economists at Morgan Stanley, but first named is Chitar Iyer. Their conclusion is that austerity is not the answer, and it's not enough to run primary surpluses on your deficit in order to reverse your public debt buildup. What you need is a significant gap between real rates and real GDP. So the gap between R minus G needs to be at least 2%. So your real rate of interest needs to be very, very low. They suggest minus 0.5 to plus 0.5. So your growth rate, your real growth rate, as long as it's exceeding your real interest rate by around about 2%, then you can delever and reverse your debt sustainability fears effectively. The successful economies in their 76 samples that were able to reverse their debt problems kept the economy running hot. So they kept monetary and fiscal expansion going until there was a well-recognised self-sustaining path for the recovery. And, you know, the lesson for that is, although you can say that the economy is running hot in the United States at the moment, are we yet on a self-sustaining path to recovery? And I think that that's, you would probably argue that that is not clear-cut yet. Even if you argued that there are some inflationary pressures building up. So successful ones kept fiscal and monetary expansion going for longer probably than the press and market commentators and etc. were comfortable with. So you need very strong growth in order to do this. So modelling for the United States using the CBO, it's Congressional Budgetary Office, forecasts for the debt path going forwards to keep debt to GDP at around 100%, roughly where it is now in the United States. As I say, they need a real rate there of around about zero, so minus 0.5 to plus 0.5, and that's assuming real GDP growth of around 1.5 to 2.25. So, you know, that's probably in line with most in the market's expectations for where it will be. It's obviously been coming down, that potential rate of GDP in developed markets for the past 30 years or so. The risk, of course, is that inflation does take off by more than people are comfortable with, and that leads to expectations that the Federal Reserve will tighten policy in the future, and then financial conditions tighten, and you end up with both the real rate of interest going up as people worry about credibility, and you get real growth going down as financial conditions tighten. So that's the risk if you get this wrong. But nevertheless, when you look at those successful in reducing their debt burdens when it got to a similar build-up as it is today, the gap between real rates and real GDP of minus 2%, those that were unsuccessful had it the other way around. They had their real rate on average of 1.5% above the real rate of growth, and that leads to a debt explosion. Have good weekends. Catch up with you soon. Bye.